Welcome to this sermon in our sermon series entitled Jesus' Greatest Stories. Today's sermon title, A Little Mercy Now. Open your Bible to Matthew 18, verses 23 through 35. And let's begin.
When Sarah Montana was 22 years old, a 17-year-old troubled boy from their neighborhood broke into her family's house. He was attempting to rob the house, but her 19-year-old brother was asleep on the couch. He got scared and shot him and murdered him, and then also murdered her mom. He was convicted of the crime. He was sentenced to do two life sentences in jail. And 7 years after this event occurred, Sarah realized she really hadn't forgiven him for what he'd done. She thought that she had, and she told people that she had, and she acted like she had, but realized she was still chained to him and what he'd done to their family. So she started trying to figure out, how do you actually forgive somebody? And she started researching theology and religion and science and psychology and philosophy and what everybody had to say on forgiveness, when she realized that she was asking the wrong question. The question wasn't, how do you forgive somebody else, but why? Why would we forgive someone? Why do we need to? And so she gave this really interesting TED Talk about her family story. It's called The Real Risk of Forgiveness and Why It's Worth It. And she kind of shares her process. She said, most of us are forgiving for the wrong reasons. What happens is we think if you forgive quickly, it makes you a good person, right? Because good people forgive. And if you forgive quickly, then that makes you a good person. Like, we want to look good, so we try to forgive and move on. She said, or a lot of times victims feel a lot of pressure to forgive from everybody else, because they want to move on, and as long as you are still stuck in it, they feel uncomfortable, and like, they can't move on until you move on. And so we like to please people, so we try to do it quickly to let them off the hook. And she said, or we think it's a shortcut to healing, right? Like, we don't want to do the messy, vulnerable, emotional part of the process because it stinks and nobody likes that part. So we try to skip the messy side and just go right towards the healing. She said, but the problem was, this doesn't work. And she said, here's what she learned with all of this process that she went through. We forgive because forgiveness is designed to set us free. She said, you say, I know what you did. I know it, and it's not okay, but I also recognize that you are more than what you've done, and I don't want to hold us captive to this thing you've done anymore. She said, a lot of times culture tries to tell us that vengeance is freedom, right? Like, you get even, you feel better, you can move on. She said, but actually it's a prison that we capture ourselves in. And a lot of times we avoid this thing like the plague because we don't want to look at our wounds. They're scary and they're messy and they're nasty. And so she did all of this thinking, all of this processing, and she got to a point where she wrote a letter to this now 25-year-old man who was in prison who killed her mom and brother. She tore out the pages from her mom's unfinished journal, and she wrote him this letter. She said, what you did was not okay. But just because it's not okay doesn't mean you owe me anything. Not an apology, not an explanation, not the role as my villain in life. She said, I hated to be reduced to one thing that happened on one day because I yearned to be more and I yearned to be whole. She said, I couldn't do that if I looked at one person and reduced him to one thing he did and made him the evil sum of his parts. She said, so I said, I wish you a lifetime full of healing, and I forgave him. Folded up the letter, put a stamp on it, and put it in the mail. She said, forgiveness is tricky, but it's never too late to let go of your villains and reclaim yourself. Now, what's so fascinating about this is, to me, is forgiveness is one of those things, like, we know we're supposed to do it. We know it's the right thing that we're supposed to do. But if we're perfectly honest, we don't want to. And we have certain situations in our life where we feel like, I shouldn't be expected to, right? Like, we have all these questions about forgiveness, like, who do I have to forgive? Like, certainly not that person for what they did, right? Like, how much do I have to forgive them? Like, what's my limitations here? Or what if they aren't sorry? What if they don't care? What if I just absolutely don't want to? And one of the things I love the most about Peter from the Bible, I feel like sometimes he speaks my language, is he brought these questions to Jesus. And he said, like, okay, let's narrow this down here, Jesus. Like, say somebody hurts me. How many times do I have to forgive them? Like, give me a number, right? Like, let's make this easy. Let's put a number to it. Then I can say, like, I've done it that many times. Like, and he does. He's like, seven? Seven's good, right, Jesus? Like, if I just forgive somebody seven times, like, that's effort. You can tell I tried. Like, I should be let off the hook, right? And of course, Jesus is like Peter. Way more than that. And he's brilliant, and he uses this moment to address this very, very hard question by telling a story to illustrate why this matters so much. So he tells a story about a king. And he said the king is kind of going through his books. He's closing up end of year, and he's settling all the accounts and who owes what bills. And what he realized was he came across one of their servants who owed a huge debt. It had gotten so big that he could never pay it off. Even if the servant gave every penny he made for the rest of his life, he could never pay off this debt that he owed the king. So the king had the servant brought before him. He explained, look, your debt's out of hand. I'm never going to make that money back. So my solution is I'm going to sell you. I'm going to sell your wife. I'm going to sell your kids. I'm going to sell everything you own and try and make at least back some of the money that I own. So when the servant hears this, he falls down at the feet of this king and he says, please, please, like, if you just give me a little bit of mercy, a little bit of time, I can figure this out. I can pay it back. Please just be patient with me. And something about this servant's response triggers the heart of the king, and he decides to have mercy on him. So he raises him up off his feet, and he's moved to compassion by his plea and his family, and he doesn't have him sold off. He releases him from custody, and not only does he release him, he forgives him the entire debt. So he lets him free, he lets his family free, and takes away all the payment that he owes. Like, you'd think as soon as this man hears this news, like, he'd feel so much relief. Like, I imagine somebody being like, you don't ever have to make a mortgage payment again. I'd be like, yes, right? Like, let's have a party. Like, let's make a big deal. Like, that sense of burden has been lifted, and like, go eat something fancy and have a party, and that freedom and that joy that you would feel. But instead of feeling that way, this servant who's just been forgiven this lifetime of debt goes out and finds the other person who owes him about $10. He grabs him by the neck, chokes him, and says, you pay me back every single penny that you owe me. And this other servant who owes him the money, he falls down on his feet and he says, please, I don't have the money, but just be patient with me. I'll figure out how to get it. Just give me a little bit of time. I'll pay you all back. But this servant, who's just been forgiven so much, isn't moved to compassion, and he has him thrown into prison. Now, there are other people kind of watching what's going on, and they saw that this one guy got forgiven this huge debt, and he's raking this other guy over the coals for like $10, and they can't take it. So they run back to the king. They tell the king everything that happened, and this is what the king says when he has the servant brought back before him. It's in Matthew chapter 18. It says, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me, and should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you? And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he could pay all of the debt. So Jesus tells the story, and then he wraps it up by making this point. He says, so also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you don't forgive your brother from your heart. So Jesus tells this story not to, like, scare us into saying, here's how you stay out of jail, or here's how you stay out of hell, right? Like, his purpose of this story is, let me illustrate to you how powerful mercy and forgiveness can actually be. What happens is, when we are the ones who mess up, when we are the ones who are in the wrong and do the thing we shouldn't do, we want patience, we want mercy, we want grace, we want understanding, we want time to make it right, we want a second chance, right? Like, just give me a minute, I can fix this. But the other side is, when we are the ones who've been hurt, when we are the ones who've been wronged, we want justice. We want vengeance. We want retribution. We want to make them pay. We want them to hurt as bad as they've hurt us. And the problem is, we can't have both. We can't accept forgiveness and not offer it. We can't receive mercy and never show any. We can't take grace and not give any out in return. Because these are polar opposite ways of doing life, and you can't live it in the middle. Because it ruins us. It traps us into a prison we can never escape, and it slowly eats away at our hearts and our sense of well-being. I mean, we can't know God, who is loving and just and merciful and compassionate and kind, and not be changed by the mercy that he's shown us. And this is exactly what Jesus wants to challenge us with in the story. I mean, how in the world can we expect the world to see, people to see how loving and forgiving our amazing God is when they've never seen us forgive anybody? How can we ever expect to make a difference in the world for good or change with grace and kindness when we are stuck in our prisons of holding grudges and looking to get even with everybody who's ever hurt us? And so Jesus tells us this story to help us look at it all in a different way. Because sometimes if we can just shift our perspective a little bit, we see things and we have the space to experience them differently. So Peter asks Jesus a legitimate question that we've all felt. But what Jesus pushes back with is, it's not the right question. How many times we forgive isn't the question. Instead, we have to focus on, why do we forgive? Instead of focusing on how often do I have to do it, we have to say, why? And Jesus shows us the why by pointing to how merciful and forgiving God has been to us. Timothy Keller, in his book, The Reason for God, explains this really well. He says, just think for a second from like an economic standpoint. Say you let your friend borrow your car, and in the process of backing out of your driveway, they run into a gate, the grate falls down, the wall gets broken. What are you going to do? You kind of have two options here, right? You have no insurance to cover the damage that's been done. Somebody has to pay for it. So the one option is to force the friend to pay for the damage that's been done. It was their fault. They got the accident. They were driving the car. They should be held responsible. He said, or the other option is you pay for it. Either you make your friend pay or you pay for it and you cover the cost of the damage. He said, or if you wanted to split hairs and you could go down the middle, they pay for some, you pay for some, you could find a middle. He said, but either way you do it, the damage doesn't just disappear on its own. Somebody has to pay for it. The damage that's been done to the car doesn't just go invisible and disappear. There's still a cost that has to get paid, a debt that has to be earned. Somebody has to pay for it. And he said, in this illustration, forgiveness is bearing the cost of what happened yourself. But then look what he goes on to say. Most of the wrongs that have been done to us, they can't be assessed in purely economic terms. Someone may have robbed you of some happiness, reputation, opportunity, or certain aspects of your freedom, and no price tag can be put on such things. Yet we still have a sense of violated justice that doesn't go away even when the other person says, I'm sorry. When we've really been wronged, what happens is we have this sense of the person who hurt us has to pay. They have to make it right. That debt that they've incurred in our lives and what we've lost has to be dealt with. And who's going to make them pay? Who's going to make it better by making them pay? And he said, in that scenario, we have two options. The first option is we can look to make the other person suffer for what they've done. And sometimes we do this in a very passively aggressive way, right? Like we withhold the relationship. Like, I'm going to prove that I'm right and they're wrong, and they're going to stew in their uncomfortableness until they finally admit it and realize, which we've tried this and it's never worked, right? Like, we try to like passively aggressively like withhold ourselves, thinking if they're just on their own long enough, they'll figure it all out. Or we maybe try to confront them and we say hurtful things back, like they hurt me and now I'm going to hurt them, and we get in their face and we yell and we scream. Or we talk about them behind their back, right? Like, I might not have the courage to confront them, but I'm going to say every mean thing I can behind their back. I'm going to ruin their reputation, and everybody else is going to know what a terrible, horrible person they are. So, but the problem with this option is when we do that, you become harder. You become colder. You become more self-pitying and far more self-absorbed. It doesn't end up making us feel better, but instead it perpetuates the cycle of reaction and retaliation that goes on and on and on. He said, when this evil's been done to you and when you try to get payment back through revenge, the evil doesn't disappear. It doesn't go away. It begins to seep into our lives and into our character. So the other option is you can forgive. But there's a cost, because if you forgive, what you're doing is refusing to make them pay for what they did. And sometimes refusing to make them pay means not lashing out back. Now, if you've ever bitten your tongue and not said what you want to say, there's a cost to that, right? Like, there's a hardship to that saying the thing that you want to say. It's kind of agony sometimes, right? Like, it would feel good momentarily to say this thing that I want to say, but what I'm saying is I'm not going to, because it's not going to make the situation better. He said, in that option, you take it on yourself instead of taking it out on the other person. And then listen to what he says that's so powerful that ties this together. He said, should it surprise us that when God determined to forgive us rather than punish us for all the ways we have wronged him and one another, that he went to the cross in the person of Jesus Christ and died there? On the cross, we see God doing visibly and cosmically what every human being must do to forgive someone, though on an infinitely greater scale. God didn't inflict pain on somebody else, but rather on the cross, he absorbed the pain, violence, and evil of the world into himself. He said, there is a God who becomes human and offers his own lifeblood in order to honor moral justice and merciful love so that someday he can destroy all evil without destroying us. Isn't that powerful, this is? So there was a debt to be paid. God himself paid it. There was a penalty to be borne. God himself bore it. Forgiveness is always a costly form of suffering. And he makes this point, and it so beautifully illustrates what Jesus tells us in the story. On the cross, Jesus Christ wiped out a lifetime of debt. And he did it out of mercy and love and compassion and grace. There was a cost and he bore it. There was suffering and he took it. And he released us from our debts. He didn't make us pay, but he took the payment on himself. And here's this tension that Jesus wants us to wrestle with and feel when we read the story. We cannot accept the forgiveness that God extends to us, the lifetime of debt that he wipes away, without wanting to find ways to forgive others who've hurt us. It doesn't work. Not because it's easy, it's not. It's hard and it's messy and it hurts, but because the alternative is much, much worse. Holding on to grudges and anger and bitterness, it takes up all the available space in our hearts and in our lives. And we don't ever get to fully live the lives we've been designed for when we cling to them. We can't find health and joy and peace when we are having anger and bitterness rotting away in our heart. We can't walk in the light when we won't leave the darkness. There's a cost. There's a cost to waiting for what we think that we're owed, or holding out until we finally think they get what they deserve, right? Like, I'm right, they're wrong, it's their fault, they got to make it right. But they don't pay the cost, we do. There's a cost to be paid, and when we live in the world of anger and bitterness and pain and hurt, we pay the cost, and we pay it with our future. We pay it with our well-being and our hope. And it doesn't just affect us emotionally, but physically as well. There's been all this research being done by Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins that when we hang on to anger and bitterness and these grudges, it's all associated with these higher risks of like coronary heart disease and stress and what it does to our body. They said what happens is when you refuse to let go of anger, you put your body into a continual stress response. So when you feel stressed out, you go into this kind of like fight or flight. What do? Your body's on edge, and you do it again and again and again and again, and it burns out your body in a chronic way. It brings anger and bitterness and depression and anxiety. So, but on the other side, when we choose forgiveness, it can actually lead to improved mental health, less anxiety, less stress, less hostility, lower blood pressure, fewer symptoms of depression, a stronger immune system. When we deal with it, we release our bodies from the physical toll that it takes. Brene Brown said it powerfully. She said, pain is unrelenting. It's going to get our attention. Despite our attempts to drown it in addiction, to physically beat it out of one another, to suffocate it with success and material trappings, or to strangle it with our hate, pain will find a way to make itself known. She said, the pain's only going to go away when we acknowledge it and care for it. When we address it with love and compassion, it only takes a minuscule percentage of the energy that it takes to fight it. But the problem is, approaching our pain head on is terrifying. And sometimes anger is a catalyst. Like, we should be mad. We should feel angry that something happened. It can catalyze us into processing what we're going through. But if we hold on to that anger, it exhausts us and makes us sick. If we internalize that anger, it takes away our joy and our spirit. And when we externalize the anger, it makes us less effective in our attempts to create change and to forge connection. She said, yes, it's an emotion that we need to feel, but what happens is we get to let it transform into something life-giving. Instead of getting stuck in anger, we can transform it into courage and love and change and compassion and justice. She said, anger is a powerful catalyst, but it is a life-sucking companion. Our pain demands to be felt. It's there and it's real. And we are allowed to process it in healthy ways. But the tension is we can't get stuck in it and not find our way out. So how do we do this? What do we do next when we come to this tension point? We can't go back. How do we move forward? The first thing is we have to remember what forgiveness isn't. Forgiveness isn't us saying, you're off the hook. Nothing bad happened. It's okay and it doesn't matter. Forgiveness isn't us becoming a floor mat and laying down and letting life abuse us. Forgiveness doesn't mean that you don't have any more feelings about the situation or that you even need to tell the person who hurt you that they're forgiven. Forgiveness doesn't mean that you even have to include them in the rest of your life. Forgiveness isn't weakness. Sometimes it feels like, well, if I let them off the hook, then I'm weak and they get away with one, right? Like they get off the hook. Instead, it takes much more strength and courage to plow through the process of how to forgive than it does to hang on to a grudge and anger. So when we remember what forgiveness isn't, we get to focus on what we can do. We get to acknowledge first something happened. And it was awful. It was horrible. It was bad. It happened, and I can't change it. I can't control it. I can't make it disappear. I can't make it go away. And when we acknowledge that something happened, we allow ourselves to process the emotion of what happened. We feel the pain, the anger, the frustration, the hurt, the loss, the grief. And then when we acknowledge it, when we allow ourselves to feel the pain, we recognize, what can I do next? As we push into the realm of what we can do, what forgiveness is, we have to acknowledge that to move forward, there are some things I have to leave behind. I can't go forward in a healthy way if I'm dragging these things along with me. Because at its very core, forgiveness is letting go. Forgiveness is releasing. It's giving up the debt. It's giving up the sense of, I need justice. I need somebody else to make it right. So if we're going to move forward in that way, the first thing we have to let go of and give up on is resentment. What happens is anger unchecked leads to resentment. Instead of anger being the catalyst that like stirs us on and helps us transform into moving the next step in the healthy process, we get stuck in the anger and the anger deepens and spread. And it turns into resentment, which leads to bitterness. And now some of us have dealt with this, right? We know people who've built a lifetime on anger and resentment, and they're so bitter about what's happened to them in their lives, they can't see anything else. We all have these deep seeds of resentments that we have to let go. We have these emotions that stir up in us, and they just hold us hostage to our past. The problem is we somehow have this misguided notion that if I let go of being angry, if I let go of the resentment that I feel, then they get off the hook. Then they get released from what they've done. Then they never have to deal with the problem, and then it's they got away with something, right? The problem is, the other person isn't affected by our anger and resentment. We are. We are the ones who swallow the seed of bitterness and poison until it rots away at a healthy future. We can't live there. We can't live stuck, chained to the past. Yes, we've experienced loss and unfairness and pain and hurt. But to move forward, there are baggages that we have to drop off and stop trying to take them with us. They're heavy and they're burdensome, and our lives weren't meant to be defined by them. We can't move forward when we get stuck in the past. Because the truth is, our best future is waiting for us. The rest of our life is there, ready to be lived. But to do it, we've got to abandon some of these heavy loads of luggage that we've been dragging along with us. The past is the past. We can't go back and change it. We can't go back and make it different. There's nothing we can do to erase it, but we can find ways to move forward. We have to give up revenge. We have to give up this sense that we can somehow get even with somebody else, right? Because the problem is there's no such thing. We can never get even enough to make ourselves feel better. We can never hurt somebody else enough to make our hurt go away. We can never get enough revenge to erase the unfairness of what's happened to us. The problem is there's never enough. There's only more. And in the end, the pain doesn't get erased. The hurt doesn't go away. It just perpetuates the cycle and does damage to our character and our hearts instead. We have to let go of the sense that we somehow need to make it right by getting retribution, by making somebody else hurt as much as we hurt. Every hurt we've experienced, no matter if the person apologizes for it or doesn't, no matter if they attempt to get it right or don't even care, it does not go unseen by God. It matters to Him. And our sense of justice doesn't live in what other people can do for us. Our sense of justice rests wholly in a God who promises He is at work making all things right. And when we can shift our focus just a little bit from getting even in revenge and perpetuating the hurt, we create space for grace. We create all of this room instead of trying to get even and about payback and injustice and experiences and karma. We live in this realm of, I know what it feels like to be treated better than I deserve because it's how God treats me. I know what it looks like to experience the grace of Jesus Christ. How do I look for ways to do that for others? We all need mercy. We all need the mercy that God finds ways to show us. But the truth is, we need to be givers of mercy as well. Because I can't ever fully appreciate the mercy that's been shown to me if I'm unwilling to extend it to somebody else. I can't ever understand how much it costs to show mercy until I've experienced the cost of showing it to somebody else. And when we're honest, we know this, right? Like, I've never been changed by somebody's anger, have you? Like, nobody's, like, screamed and demeaned me into be like, you know what? On that last insult, you really proved I'm wrong and you're right. Like, I've never had somebody, like, meanly, strongly yell and say awful things into changing my behavior. It's made me lose my temper. It's made me say things I shouldn't have said. But it's never like, oh my gosh, I've seen the light. I want to change. Things should be different, right? Instead, I have had people's kindness change me into wanting to do better. I have had a gentle hand remind me and show me that that isn't the right way. And look, God does that for us. God doesn't shame us into changing. He doesn't hold our list of every bad thing we've ever done over our heads and bring it up every time we mess up, right? Like, I've kept score. Here's all the things that you've done. What are you going to do to make it right? God doesn't do that to us. He shows us grace and treats us better than we deserve right in the middle of us being jerks. And when we give up the cause for vengeance and revenge and retribution, we find space to start looking at people through the lens of grace. If God can afford to treat me better than I deserve, who am I to hold out sharing grace with those around me? Because every single one of us is more than the worst thing that we've ever done. Every single one of us is not defined by our worst moments in life. Christ doesn't see me for my ugliness. He doesn't see me for the worst things that I've ever done. He sees us for who we are becoming. He sees in us the potential for who He created us to be. And by the power of Jesus Christ, he says, now take those eyes, take that heart, and look at others that way. They're more than the worst thing that they've ever done, and so are you. Our revenge never makes the world a better place. Our vengeance that we want to cling to and our sense of making it right does not heal the hurts of our life or of the world. But grace and kindness always have the potential to make change. If we are ever going to move forward in any kind of a healthy way, we have to give up the resentment. We have to give up the sense of revenge and making other people pay. And then we also have to give up of living in the world of self-pity. Yes, we have experienced hard and hurt and pain and wrong has been done, but we can't live there. We can't live in the cycle of feeling sorry for ourselves because it doesn't make us feel better. It doesn't lead to a sense of feeling better, but instead to a place of despair. And it drains us of any energy or mental strength and absolutely destroys our chances of moving forward. I mean, it's so normal to feel sad when something hard happens. It's 100% okay to feel frustrated at unfair circumstances and to get angry when wrong things happen. But if we don't use it to process forward, it drags us into places beyond grief, beyond heartbreak, and it leaves us in a place of destruction and captivity that we can't find a way out. When we get stuck in these cycles of self-pity, all we ever see is the negative, right? We only see the bad things that have happened and the doom and the gloom and the hard, and we can't see beyond it. We paint ourselves as the role of the victim and say, I can't do anything. I have no control. I have no power. There's nothing I can do to make anything any different. Yes. Terrible things have happened. Yes, it hurt. Yes, it was beyond our control. But that's not the entire story. That's not the only story, because we are more than just victims of life experience and what's happened to us. We all yearn to be more than the things that we've experienced. When we release and let go of the self-pity and the self-despair we get stuck in, we create the space for hope. We create the space for possibility. We create this realm where anything can happen and anything can be. We create these pockets to see God isn't done yet, that there is more life waiting to be lived, and there is more joy to be experienced, and there is more to come. But we can't get there when we're still clinging to resentment and revenge and self-pity. And friends, Christ came to set us free. He gave his life to free us from the things that would hold us captive and hold us back. It is only in forgiveness that we find freedom. It's when we choose to let go of the right things that we create this space to move forward into a completely different future. And it's never too late to look for ways to choose forgiveness. I read an incredible article this week about a man named Dashrath Manji. He lived in a small village in India, and his village was very isolated from the rest of the world and the bigger cities that were in the area. There was these huge mountains in between his village and the city, and the only way to get to any of the public facilities, the hospitals, the schools, was to trek miles and miles around the mountains to get through. When his wife was injured one day in the hills, she'd gotten hurt really badly. To reach the nearest hospital, he had to travel around 70 kilometers to get her there, and she died along the way. He was just crushed and devastated by the loss, and he had a choice. He could have clung to this anger and this pain at losing his life. He could have blamed the city. He could have blamed the organizations. He could have blamed other people, how unfair it was. But instead, he chose a very, very different path. He sold his family's 3 goats, and he bought a hammer and a chisel. And every day, he would get up, he would do his job out plowing in the fields, and then he would come to this mountain, and in the evening and through the night, he would take his hammer and chisel and start chipping away at the mountain. He decided that what happened to him wasn't going to happen to somebody else, and he was going to build a road through this mountain and make his village more accessible. And every day he'd get up and he'd work in the fields, and then he'd take his hammer and chisel. He had no tools. He had no excavating equipment. He would just set little fires in the rocks and pour water on it to try and make it easier to chip up. And people thought he was a lunatic. I mean, one man with a hammer and a chisel against a mountain. Mountain wins every time, right? But day after day after day, he would just show up and chip away at this mountain. And for 22 years, he chiseled away through the mountain until he finally built a road all the way through. What took 70 kilometers to previously travel now took one. And he made this progress because he said, I don't want another man to lose his wife. I don't want another kid to lose their mother. And instead of being held captive by anger and resentment and revenge and frustration, he took it out on the mountain and he chipped away until he found a way through. I mean, we all have these giant, immovable mountains of anger and frustration and resentment that build up in our lives. But friends, the only way out is through. And I don't care if you have to chip away at it for a lifetime, we get to choose forgiveness and get to the other side. I mean, who knows what might happen if we started looking for ways to show mercy, what future we might change, what life we might live, and what good we might do. It is never too late to start choosing mercy. It is never too late to choose forgiveness. It's never too late to open up this space in our hearts where we can find mercy and hope and compassion. Dear Father, I pray that you would be with us, please. I pray that you would help us have the courage and the strength to move forward into a healthy future. Father, I pray where anger and bitterness have been eating away in our hearts, that you would help us to find hope and grace and compassion. I pray, Father, where we have been held hostage to a life of frustration and unfairness and feeling like a victim, you would give us the power to choose a different path. Help us, I pray. Help us to accept the incredible mercy that you show us and to extend that out into the world. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on Christ Church, please check us out on the web at www.christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, please contact us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.